This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi. I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network.
Welcome to DM2GM, the podcast where we help you get comfortable getting your game started around the table. I am your GM, Sean Howard, from The End of Time and Other Bothers, and with me...
your DM from Dungeons & Dragons, Russ Moore. How's it going?
It's going great! And today, we're here to talk about a topic we both love. So we have a question, Russ, which is, what do you do if you don't know a rule? There's a few questions here, but the first one, and I put them all under the title, I think you did this, put them under the title, Our Guide to Winging It. Oh yeah, I'm super excited about this.
This is the best place to be when you don't know what's happening. It's exciting, it's thrilling, it's like, am I breaking the game? Well, you're not going to find out till later, let's run in. So what do you do if you don't know a rule, Sean?
Make it up.
Yeah, do that. If you're sitting around a table and you've designated a person to find rules, let them find the rule and make a ruling and then come back to it later. But make it up. I often, and Sean probably agrees, go for the rule of cool, which if it sounds fun and it seems achievable by a character, let them roll for it.
Yes, 100%. If it's going to be cool, come up with what you think a role is. Just do it. And later you can fix it if you need to. You wouldn't even fix it. Later you can understand what the rule might be. But just have fun in the moment. If it's cool, do it. Also, you don't always have to roll. It's your table. Like, if someone's like, I want to put my ear to the door and see if I hear anything, and you're like, oh, what roll? I don't know the rule. You just can decide. Oh, you hear some murmuring.
Yeah.
And the story moves on. Nobody's going to be like, oh, but we didn't roll. Like, if they're like, I put my ear to the door, and you're like, oh, you hear a murmuring. That's it. Moving on. You don't have to know a rule. So there are cases where you can just be like, yeah, it works. Or no, it doesn't. Like, if it's just in the story, like, there'd be no way you could hear anything. Just say you don't hear anything.
Yeah. Now, maybe you put your ear up to the door, you hear murmuring, but then they say they pull out this glass and they put it up to the door. Well, that changes a little bit. Maybe you get like a key phrase, but that's it.
Right.
So just it puts it back on them to figure out how narratively they're getting their character into this scene that they're trying to push you to get into. If there's really nothing there, then there's no need to roll. There's no fear of failure or loss. So just give them something and then hopefully the scene moves on. And if they want to just kick in the door, well, somebody's in there talking, obviously.
And I think that's even a rule now in 5e, because I know in 2e you had to roll supposedly for everything. I think in 5e, right? Correct me if I'm wrong here, Russ, D&D 5e, there's a rule that if you have copious amounts of time, you don't have to keep rolling a skill check. You're going to, if it's feasible to do it, you're probably going to figure out how to do it. If you're not under pressure in battle, right? Like you're going to stack some logs or...
I can't remember the exact phrase, but yeah, if there's no danger to the character, they can keep trying. It's like anybody, like if you get a door stuck, you know, you're not going to try it once and then be like, well, that door's stuck forever. You're going to keep trying until the door opens.
And one of the problems in early D&D was you kept having people just keep rolling until it's just monotonous, because at some point, even if they're rolling really badly, at some point it's going to work.
Yeah.
So the idea is just let it happen. But let's talk about the problem. The problem we haven't talked about, which is, it's a potential. It's something I think we've all run into. You've got someone at your table. You say, they're like, I put my ear to the door. And you're like, you don't hear anything. And they go, oh, this is an intelligence check, or, you know, this is a, what's the skill? What skill would this be?
Perception, Russ? Or?
Perception. My favorite.
Or investigation.
Well, I want to roll perception and see if I hear anything. So they're basically going to challenge you. They're going to, like, it happens. You're going to be like, oh, it doesn't work. Or don't just roll a d20, and if it's over 5. And someone at your table, in that moment where you're like, you're not sure what the rule is, you just decided on what it's going to be, they might challenge you and go, well, actually, this should be a... In that moment, what I recommend doing, after having many years, is just say to them, thank you. This is what we're doing right now. I want you to write that down on a card. Here's a card. And at the end of the game, we're going to go talk about that and check the rule book. Right?
Yeah.
Just say, thank you. Love it. But this is what we're doing right now. But let's write it down, because at the end of the game, when we take a break, we can pull out the book and you can let me know what the rule is.
Which is another good suggestion, is to have that debrief period either partway or at the end to bring up the rules that were like questioned or questionable, or really that you just didn't know and just went with it, but know that there probably is a rule for it, so that next time when you sit down at the table, the same thing happens. You've all read the book. You've all understood, well, that time we did what we could. This time we'll use the actual rule to play the game.
And sometimes in that debrief, you're going to come up with a house rule, because it's not going to be clear the way it's written. And you're going to have all these, like, we're not sure, but you can come to a consensus and be like, you know what? Let's all agree we're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason going on the internet or spending all this time. You're just here to play a game.
Yeah. If it speeds it up and it makes it fun, then implement as many house rules as you can. It's one of the jokes at our table is we have so many house rules that we've brought in from different game systems all over the place. I still need to write them all down one time. But it's just because in the moment, I remember back to like 4th edition or something. Well, this is how we did it there, so let's do it here. Yeah. And then we read it and it's different in 5th edition, but like, well, it was kind of fun the way we did it, so let's just keep doing it that way.
Ross and I are both recorded, like captured for all time until our feeds die.
Yeah.
Of doing something wrong. I was trying to learn Dungeon World, but as you may have heard on a previous episode, I don't spend a lot of time prepping, so I didn't spend a lot of time. It's a big book. Like, Dungeon World is the hardest Powered by the Apocalypse game there is to learn, I think. It's just a massive book. So I think I spent all the first episodes, I was rolling damage and rolling attacks by the monsters, because I was so used to doing that in D&D. Right. Like, they're attacking, or the centurions are coming, I would have them roll to hit the party. but in Powered by the Apocalypse, I, as the GM, don't really roll any dice. So, like, I was just doing it wrong. Russ, I think you didn't kill a character that should have died, or I don't remember.
So, again, that was involving Sean. But yeah, the question was, how do characters die? Like, at what point, right? What threshold?
Not that this ever happened at your table.
No.
You know, no spoiler.
Go listen to the show. You'll find it. It'll stand out.
So it's okay to get a rule wrong, but like we talked about the rule of cool. I think there's also the rule of fun.
Yeah.
Is your table having fun? Are you having fun? I find I get really... I don't like it when we spend a lot of time arguing or digging up rule books. So I don't tend to bring those players back.
That's fair.
That's not fun for me. And I don't, because I also feel the pressure that it's not fun for the other people at the table, right?
Well, because it stops the game, right?
Right. And it's okay once in a while, right, to have a conversation or to mark it and come back to it later. But I think that's another thing to think about, right? Like, what is fun for you and your table? And just if that's house rules, or if that's just, or if that is, if you're all rules lawyers, maybe you're all lawyers in real life and you just want to stop and constantly assess and look everything up and cross tabulate it.
If that's the way you play, then yeah, go for it.
Go for it.
But yeah, as long as at the end of the day, it's fair to the entire table. You're not giving one person an easy way out and then changing it for another person and then changing it for another person. As long as the rule stays consistent, which again comes to writing it down, reviewing it, and knowing for next time what, you know, what you did and what you could have done and picking the way you want to go, just make it fair and make it fun for everybody.
So the next question we had that we put under here was what to do if your party is doing something you didn't expect. So we sort of talked about this in the last episode.
In a previous episode.
Yeah, it was previous. Sorry. Yeah. We've recorded a few in a row here. So, but I want to think about like an instance, Russ, where you've set up something that they need to accomplish in order to move forward. So I want to talk about sort of a different example of this, because we've talked a bit about what to do if they sort of surprise you, like they do something different. But I've had it happen a couple times in my running tables where I've set up that a thing has to happen and it's tied into the world and all the there's multiple forces that are we're operating against the party and they're all coming down to this one action, and the party doesn't figure it out and just doesn't take it. And we end up in this very, people start to get frustrated at the table.
Yeah.
Because my tools are to escalate the situation or try and make it a little more obvious, but I don't want to give it away. And then I remember there was a whole session where everyone just sat in a bar, a pub, and all they had to do, they had found the trap door to go down below. All they had to do is go down, but they weren't doing it. And so in our debrief, they got a little frustrated. It wasn't a fun session for them. And I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but it's like, I expected them to put the clues together or to take the one exit. Like I surrounded the place. There's no other way to go. I tried to make it more and more obvious, but amping the pressure when they didn't know what to do was not fun for them.
Yeah, it's running a game in a as a DM or GM, I often have to kind of step out every now and again, knowing the outcome, because it seems so obvious. But when you have that conversation afterwards, it's like, well, it wasn't obvious, or we thought it was a trap, or we thought there's something. You have to step back and try and run through your scenario as a player. Like what things have you presented them with? What are they going to be able to do? And no, and try not to affix a single trigger to an event.
Yes.
In your example, Sean, I think is what it was.
That was my mistake.
You were so locked on that one trigger.
Yeah.
That everybody didn't use it or didn't find it. And they got frustrated and were like, well, we live here now and we're going to die.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. And looking back, they were making me offers of other ways to solve this problem. But based on their, they started in character offers, which I love.
Yeah.
Right? This is how the barbarian thought, well, we're going to rush out and attack the army that's gathering around the, I'm like, it's hundreds of people. But I could, that was an offer. Like, yeah. I could have allowed them to take that. But then what happened is they started to switch to out of character offers.
Yeah, the metagame thinking, right?
Right. They're getting frustrated. They don't know what to do. They feel like that's it. We just live here now. We're going to die. And they're just like trying to, and then they just start throwing out things. And yeah, looking back, you nailed it. I try now to never have it all be just based on one action.
Yeah. If there is only one trigger needed, like have the outcome be what the trigger is, but present them options in the room. Or dungeon or field or whatever they're in, and let them figure it out. And as soon as you get to one that's fun and cool, go for it. Or let them try everything. But
yeah,
if it doesn't make sense for what the trigger is, let them play with a few until one fits, and then your next thing occurs. The dragon shows up, or they escape into the underground tunnels.
I could have let that first idea happen. Them charging out into this army, this guy, because. What is the last thing the army knows what the army expects them that they're going to go down? Like the one thing they wouldn't expect is them to charge out of this inn into the army. It might work.
Yeah. Well, right? It catches them off guard, and then maybe it changes the encounter, right? It's no longer a battle encounter. It's you're standing in front of us. I mean, we could slaughter you now, or we could have a negotiation encounter, right?
Right.
And you're just talking to the orcs or whoever.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think, If you're in that situation where the party is not doing what you expect, that's sort of the angle I'm taking on this question, The problem might be more with you.
Yeah.
As a GM, I'm always like, wait a minute. I'm sensing I'm having, it feels like conflict with the party. Yeah. Right. It feels like, you know, they're not getting it. I'm a little frustrated. They're getting frustrated.
Tension just rises within the people, not within the characters. Character tension is okay,
yes.
But people tension, player tension right. is difficult.
And it's a good sign now to be like, okay, they're feeling frustrated. Let them do more things. Let them have agency.
Yeah.
Don't worry about my idea because I can find a way, right? The cool thing about the human brain is we have information the party does not. And letting them do their thing will present an opportunity where you can be like, oh, the dragon's just going to hear that they're now dealing with the army and think that they're being, right? The dragons are like, oh, they're making a deal with my ally who's now backstabbing me. The dragon might emerge out of the pit angry. You can do all kinds of things that will occur to you once you let the party have movement.
Yeah. So know your outcome going into most encounters. Like, what's your intent? Like, know your outcome and intent of what you want them to be doing, but give them the room to play within the space and figure out a fun character-driven way to get out of it.
Yeah, and the danger comes when you start to put it like into, like you talk about trigger, but also a place.
Yeah.
The danger comes when they have to get to a certain room. You have to ask yourself, what if they choose to never go down that corridor?
Yeah.
So allow that to be something that can happen in your world. Even if it means they walk away from your big fight, that can be super cool. The dragon grows in strength or whoever was down there.
No, very good. There's one final guide to winging it here. And it comes from having many characters here, but what are quick ways to get into character as a DM and GM? So these are your NPCs, everybody who you run into on the street, which some sessions there could be one NPC, some sessions there could be 20. It comes down to some improv ideas. Sean's got an app up.
I have an app. I took a screenshot, so we will post it somewhere.
Okay.
We can talk about some ways that we use. One challenge I often run into is when you have a lot of characters and I only have maybe six voices that I can sort of pull on, but sometimes in the spur of the moment, I give them a bit of a lilt or a something. And it's funny how even the table, having not come across this character in so long, right? It happened recently. I don't want to spoiler, but they come in contact with someone that they hadn't seen in a very long time. And I started talking and the whole table's like, oh no, that's not their voice. Like, it's important to them, right? They have this relationship based on how I act as a GM, like yeah. What posture I use, the voice. So there's an app I love called Samples. I think it's free. And it just lets me, it's like a sampler, but I can basically just record like what we're going to call a get into character line. Like, what's a common phrase they use? So if I'm trying to do that horrible Brooklyn accent, it's like, hey, I'm walking here. It still doesn't work. But then I record that and I put their name, like Captain Valta, Celine, Shattering.
Right.
So this is like, if I know I'm going to bring back a character that hasn't been around a while, I'm often like, what voice was that? And I can just hit play from that session when I created that character.
Right. And those are recordings of you doing that voice, not yes. of a, like a voice sample.
Right. Okay. It's me doing Captain Valta for one line.
Right.
So that's one, just to help you when you're planning to be like, oh yeah, that's Captain Valta. They have this like, and I can also hear my voice, how confident I am or timid, you know, yeah. or right. So it just gives me a sense of the character. But as far as getting into character, interesting question. How do you get into character, Russ?
Yeah.
How do you become Flamekins? It's sort of become second nature, isn't
Flamekins
it?
Flamekins has been around for such a long time that, yeah, I can just dive into Flamekins. But when I'm introduced with a new character or thinking of a new character, I look at what I think they look like. If they're really small, to me, they're going to have, more often than not, they're going to have a super high-pitched voice.
Right.
Or a higher-pitched voice, not a super high-pitched voice. Flamekins is one of the characters who is just always excited about everything. So everything has an exclamation point. You know, you get those emails, every sentence has an exclamation point.
I feel attacked.
I assume that Flamekins is all caps, all exclamation points, all the time. She's here just to have a great time. It doesn't matter where we go. Let's just go.
Yeah, and that's what I call a quirk.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a shorthand for something about them, right? Like how they feel, how they move in the world. Like what's their quirk?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's what they want or need, right? That's my second thing I'm often like writing on a card. I'm like, I got their quirk, like they're stately or standoffish or so excited, exclamation point. And then what is, like, for example, what does Flamekin really need? Like, I think Flamekin's is sort of a little insecure.
Yeah, she needs friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's always trying to, whether it's on a pirate ship or whether it's with the adventurers, she's always trying to find her place in the group. And have the people respect her for what she's bringing to the table.
It's so much easier to play an NPC if you know the quirk, some idea of how you're going to do the voice. Doesn't have to be a crazy voice.
Nope.
But the most important thing is the quirk and what they need or want in the world, because now you can play a character that has nuance, right? That is contiguous. I know it's a crazy word, but it means like, In the context of your table, it means that they feel like a real character they're interacting with.
Yeah.
Because they're consistent. And that doesn't mean Flamekins can't get sad. I've heard Flamekins get sad.
Yep.
But it means what makes Flamekins get sad.
Yeah. It's being cast out or cut down so often that, you know, the value and that insecurity just rises to the top, and then you just can't anymore.
Yeah.
But it gives you that grounding to know, okay, well, if X happens, what makes Y trigger, right? And it's, you know, it's interesting that you said, you know, you quirk, because that was the word I was looking for. We recently redid a bunch of stuff over on Dungeons Patreon where people can put in NPCs for us, because we always need new characters, new NPCs. So one of the form fill out is like, what's their quirk? You know,
nice.
Give me just a fun voice, a fun thing to jump into. Maybe it's, as Amy said, maybe they're always sharding. Who knows? But it doesn't have to be anything. You just assign something fun and then have that intent behind them. And then you can easily
slime me like a fish.
That's right.
One of the, I think, the challenges when you're early GMing can be stop GMing for a minute. When you're playing an NPC, I often sort of forget about the world. I forget about what has to happen in the scene. I suddenly become a player at the table. I know Flamekins, as I was playing Flamekins, it really just wants friends. And I can just like be so excited when I see the party, which actually you've done. And then just want them all to stay with me and they have to go somewhere, right? And so I'm like, no, I'll come with you. And now it's a whole new thing, right? Like, but I think one of the cool things about playing an NPC is you can forget about everything in the world. You don't have to deliver any information. Don't feel like NPCs are just there to like give the next tidbit. Play them. Have fun. Be at the table. Interact with the players. You can annoy them. You can make jokes with them. You can just find out how they're doing. Some of the favorite moments for me when listening to a live play are when an NPC, the GM's having so much fun that they then ask one of the players how they've been. Like I love that moment because we haven't seen Flamekins for 6 months. And then Flamekins is like, well, how are you? What's happened? And then the player starts, their character starts telling them how hard it's been. And it makes a really cool moment for the table.
Yeah, it's that grounding point. You know, it works twofold for your game. Like, it grounds your characters and gives them like, oh, these experiences that I had are more than just notes on a page. They are things to make the character stand out and grow and develop, saying, you know, 6 months ago, they were probably more happy-go-lucky than they are now after they fight this zombie horde. So that's going to change their character too. But it also gives your group a chance to reflect on everything. And for an NPC to drive that forward, I mean, there's an interesting point, and I think we've talked about it in the show here, because our two tables come from two mostly different sides of gameplay.
Yes.
Yours come from the acting improv side. Mine come from the let's just, you know, roll through dungeons and play side. And there was an interesting point when we had a guest player on, and my players treated them like they had a pivotal piece of information. Like, they were there just to mine that information.
To be interrogated.
And they couldn't get it because there was no information to have. They were just a character with a rich backstory that they made, but they didn't ask them. They didn't sit down at the bar and say, well, where are you from, partner? They just were like, well, what do you know about this? What do you know about this? What do you know about this?
Where's nothing. The gem? What's the path? What's the best way? Yeah. Where's the dungeon? Yeah.
Yeah. The more you can treat your NPCs and your player characters as people in this world and interact with them as such, the more rich the world becomes and the more rich your role-playing becomes. Whether we say role-playing, whether you got voices or not, that doesn't matter.
Nope.
The more you embody that character in that moment. And it makes it easier the next time to step into that character or another character because you get so invested in the player characters and you can start to see that as NPCs that you're just jumping into.
Yeah. And it's totally fine that when you're starting to RPG or play at your table, that it's a game about rules and rolling dice and just the, you know, I think for a lot of us, the start of tabletop role-playing was just the magic that happens by the randomization of the dice for the story that's happening.
Yeah.
But there's this threshold you cross as a table when you start doing what Russ so eloquently just said, where the world starts to become real. You start to step into it like an amazing book. But unlike your favorite trilogy that at some point you've read the last book and you're like, no, the table can keep playing in this world. You can keep going. That's the magic of tabletop role-playing game. Don't feel stressed if you're starting at the rolling of dice and rules. Just have fun with starting to experiment with playing NPCs. And if you want to up your game a little and feel a little more confident, even right now during the pandemic, you can take improv courses online in Zoom, and they're cheap. Some of them are free because all these improv places all around the world are like, we can't hold classes. So they're just opening it up and they're doing it on Zoom. Taking an improv class can be a really fun way as a GM to get more comfortable stepping into character in a scene and then, you know, and then on the spur of the moment. So
totally love it.
That's it. Yeah, you gotta start to see them as people who want and need something. The quirk really helps. Have fun playing with it with your table. Oh, another thing you can do, let's say you're a little awkward about playing an NPC. Have your table start playing NPCs.
Absolutely.
Let them do it.
They run into a group of guards. You can only, conveniently, you can only play one of those characters at a time, but maybe only one player character needs to be talking to this group of guards. The two other players at the table can become guards with you. And the way you all, the three of you, interact with each other now dictates how these guards view the PCs that you just ran into and gives them dynamic.
Yeah, so the party can be like, well, I walk up and talk to the guards. So you can like just go, hey, you can't come here. And then, right, Sarah? And I turn and look at one of the players who's not named Sarah, and they'll start like, right, Sarah?
Yeah, no, they can't come in here.
Well,
no.
What are you, why are you not backing me right away? I just, like, that's the rule.
Yes.
I expect a little more, you know, support here, Sarah.
Of course, yeah, no, sir, we're on lunch. They can't come in here till we're done lunch.
All right, as you heard me. And there you go. We just have, now the guards are talking to each other, having fun, and one of those was a player. And then your other players are going to have fun messing with the guards because they're seeing one of their people at the table, like, invested in the world in a fun new way.
Yeah. And yeah, that really gives them, because oftentimes you have scenes where there's one player who's really shining or having a moment, gives chance for you to introduce those other players into that scene that is being had without having to bring their player character out of the other room that they're stuck in or just, you know, using the bathroom.
So I think that's it. Have fun, guys. Enjoy playing NPCs. If you have questions about this or you're like, oh, I'm just not sure about this part of it, send us an email. Where do they email us, Russ?
Send us all your questions to dm2gmcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Discord. Links are down in the description. And in the meantime, get your game started and have fun doing it.
Yeah!
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Now playing from Voyage Media. A naked woman picked up the recently decapitated head of a goat that had been sitting in a large silver-colored bowl. She held the goat's head high above hers, its dull black eyes staring emptily as she threw her black hair and allowed the blood to trickle down the front of her body.
When the lights go down, what stories really stick with you? Presenting Fever Dreams, an anthology of dark genre stories, horror, crime, sci-fi.
My eyes settled on a crystal piece, the only thing hanging on any of the walls. A man's face, set inside a raging sun. The eyes started to glow.
Now playing from Voyage Media, in association with Seven Lamb Productions, creators of the hit audio drama Tower 4. A new descent into darkness in every episode. Season 1 of Fever Dreams, a pulp collection. Available anywhere you listen to podcasts.